who's dealing with the grief live with it rather than saying, you should be getting beyond that, you know. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so important. And karma.
Well, it's kind of curious when you mentioned that canoe, that triggered grief for me. I remember that part of the training when we were on that river with that craft, and that where I went that time was under the water with the creatures and just felt at one with that. Now, I, those of you that don't know me, I was injured about 8 years ago, and I was injured in the water. And as soon as I could, I got back on the water in craft, not walking in it or anything. And one of the best things that I did was to say yes to going in the kayak. And this is really what taught me a lot about mind, nature, connection. I went down into the water in this kayak, and the minute that craft became buoyant, then the constant electric pain got shushed. It got shushed down to where I hadn't experienced before. And that moment of medicine I carry with me all the time. And I can call on that little experience when things are getting out of hand, which with this kind of pain is often and long. And I can just be in that space. And it's so very helpful. Now, recently, I've been teaching individualized adapted yoga for a few years now, a couple of years, three, I guess. And I have one student that's been with me the whole time, and she's becoming very proficient. And she's just been in the hospital. She broke her leg. And she amazed the doctors, the nurses, and the physio with how she handled that pain. And because of Equal Wisdom, I've been able to add another dimension to the teaching. And she was able to use her mind, the mirroring that we do in the yoga, but it's also Equal Wisdom techniques. And they were just amazed at how she handled a level of pain. And they asked her how, and she said, yoga breathing. She didn't say anything else, but she's using her visualizing. And that is such a powerful tool. And I'm so grateful that it's taught in the Equal Wisdom program, because it will reach people that would maybe not have come across it in another way. So anyway, being one with yourself and the water, your feelings, and you can call in. I can call in the light of the sky to do the same thing as the water, and helps me stay functioning and even happy. Anyways, I hope that made a bit of sense.
It makes so much sense, Karma. And I would like, I think Charlotte's going to introduce a break momentarily.
Yes.
But after the break, I think that what we will do is we will pick up on a couple of things that you mentioned. You talked about breath work and visualization. And these are sort of strategies that can support our nervous system, can resource us. They're things that we talk a lot about in the Equal Wisdom training. And so I think, Charlotte, did you want to introduce a bit of a break at this point?
Yes, I'd like to say, remind listeners that you are listening to the SULUAU show, where my listeners speak up, where you can listen up and act upon what you've heard. Today, you are hearing wonderful segments from a workshop held by Eco Wisdom that is dealing with the nervous system, importance of nature to calm the nervous system of people with disabilities, and the importance of mindful nature connections to calm the nervous system in people who experience a variety of intersecting forms of discrimination. In our first section, you got some wonderful personal stories, lived experiences. You didn't, as you might see on some health programs, we weren't telling you, scientists don't want you to know about this. You can get this information for $49.99. No, you have gotten really authentic information. So we're going to not skip over the nervous system. You have some rich treasures of nuggets of information, but we're going to go into the second section, which is the importance of nature to calm the nervous system of people with disabilities who experience unique stressors related to discrimination barriers. And we'll remind you that our featured guest instructor today is Melissa, Dr. Melissa Ming-Fuanes, and she has just got everybody with that's been that attended the workshop last month and who's listening today excited about furthering their knowledge of how they can be helpful in this area. So, Carrie, back to the flow of our inspiring conversations. These are conversations, and we, since some of the previous Eco Wisdom podcast, people have heard them on our station, and they've asked if they could be played again. So I'm sure this one will be one that people will request because it's so rich with information that's easy for people to apply. And it's so easy as well throughout Canada to get in touch with a guide who has a level of authenticity, but also just the desire to help people rather than to see how they might profit from them. So now I will just go on to Nervous System, Nature, and Disability with Dr. Carrie, carrying on.
Thank you. And, you know, maybe this is a good time to let people know that EcoWisdom has a website, ecowisdom.ca. We have Instagram, EcoWisdom Forest Preserve with an underscore in between. And we have a team of over 20 people, and it's growing. And we have another whole resource that we'll be adding to the website of our graduating nature and forest therapy guides. And these are people that are trained in the science of forest bathing, but also things like accessibility and the effects of discrimination on the nervous system and the ways that spending time in nature can build a sense of community and peer support and belonging. And so really we encourage people to check us out and contact our guides for their wisdom. All right, so here we are back again for our second segment. So in our first segment, we talked about the nervous system and gave some real life examples. And now I'd like us to move into talking about a couple of specific strategies that we use in our EcoWisdom training program. And I'm going to pass it over to Melissa in a minute to sort of elaborate on sort of some of the foundational knowledge of why it's important and how we can facilitate resourcing to build regulation into our participants who might be coming into a program. EcoWisdom serves a very diverse population, and so we may very well have people who have experiences that make them a little bit more sensitive to nervous system disruptions. And so I'm going to pass it over to you, Melissa, to talk a little bit about, and I'm particularly interested in the use of visualization. We do that a lot in our programs, and also breath work and connecting breath work with something like movement, because we do that also in our mindful movement as part of our model. Can I pass it over to you to just provide us a little bit of scientific background?
Sure, of course. And if it's okay, I'd like to segue into this by building off of some comments in the last segment about grief, because sometimes I think people have a misunderstanding that mindfulness is a bypass for grief, or the goal is for us to be happy or joyful all the time. And I actually really think of mindfulness as a way to be with and hold our experiences and the spectrum of experiences we carry as humans. And with grief in particular, grief isn't necessarily something that takes us outside of our window of tolerance. Like, sometimes we can be crying and feel physical pain with the weight of grief, but still feel like it's tolerable or bearable. And so one of our mentors, Kari Tara Brock, often talks about this idea of this belongs. Like, whatever comes up in mindfulness belongs. And that is part of what we are practicing, is that inclusion, not shutting our own selves out of our hearts. And so I just wanted to highlight that, because sometimes when we slow down and get present, it's not pleasant. And a lot of intense emotions come up. But it is an act of self-compassion to witness that in ourselves, and also to have companions in that, whether it's nature, whether it's human community, whether it's animals. I mean, it could be all sorts of things. So I think something I often ask myself when an intense emotion comes up in a mindfulness practice is, what is here? And can I be with this? With kindness. And that is often how we think about mindfulness, a branch of awareness. What is here right now? And compassion. Can I be with this with kindness? And if the answer is no, then perhaps we bring in some kind of regulation tool, which I know we're about to talk about. So you don't have to force yourself to be with something that is so painful to be with that you feel panicked or frozen, or you're starting to dissociate. However, it is important to learn to trust your own wisdom about your window of tolerance. No one else can tell you whether you're inside or outside of it. And so I think it's important to be self-compassionate and not force yourself to stay with an emotion or an experience that is too difficult in that moment. But I think it's also important to not overly fragilize ourselves or other people and assume that they can't tolerate something that they're experiencing on the inside. So I think mindfulness and I think nature can really help us hold a lot of life difficulties and complexities. So I wanted to just put that out there, that grief is very real. Lots of intense emotions can come up, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're dysregulated. Like, intense emotion is different than dysregulation. It's different than being outside that window. So, Kari, you asked specifically to talk about some of the strategies that you all highlight in the program for regulation, and I love all of them. So visualization, I think, can be a really powerful strategy. Like any strategy, not every strategy is for everyone. So I think it's also important to recognize that if a certain strategy doesn't work for you, there's nothing wrong with you. You don't have to force it. It just doesn't work for you, and that's okay. There's a lot of research that a lot of people with different forms of neurodiversity really struggle with visualization. So that's something to keep in mind. But that's not true for everyone who's neurodiverse. So with visualization, you know, some of the other strategies you mentioned, Kari, like breathing or movement or combining breathing and movement can be powerful. But some of those can't be accessible to people. Movement, for example, or even breathing. Certain kinds of traumas, medical procedures can create trauma associations with breathing in certain ways. And so sometimes even visualizing a certain way of breathing or a certain rhythm of the ocean or the swaying of the trees. Like, if we think about breath, one of the things scientifically that helps with breath is the rhythmic nature of breath. And so there are other ways to access that rhythm. Again, that could be movement. It could be combining breath with movement, perhaps moving your hands or your body in a certain way as you breathe. But you can also do that visually if movement or breathing aren't accessible to you or don't work for you. And you could also visualize a different kind of place than you're in. Like, if the, say you're in a group that's doing forest bathing, and for you, there are certain associations with forests or trees that are agitating or bring up grief or trauma, you could visualize another soothing place in your head or even a color. Sometimes even visualizing a supportive figure. It could be real, it could be imagined, the person, it could be a person, doesn't have to be living or dead, it could be a spiritual figure, anything that has some sort of sense of meaning to you. It could even be a color, like bringing, a photograph, bringing a photograph with you and looking at that or visualizing a favorite photograph. So I do think visualization can be really powerful. You can also visualize yourself moving if movement isn't accessible to you. Or you could visualize yourself walking through the forest and creating a mandala of found objects. So there's like the sky is the limit when it comes to visualization. And I think that can be a really powerful strategy. Breathing, you mentioned, Kari, there are so many different kinds of breathing practices. And some can be more helpful to people than others. So some people prefer a more vigorous breath pattern, especially if they feel tired or sluggish. This is not a technical breath pattern, but I call it the sniff, sniff, ha, ha breath pattern, where you're like, sort of like that. That's a more invigorating breath pattern that can be really regulating for people. Sometimes something that is more slow, like deep belly breathing or aligning movement with breath or counting. I mentioned kind of expanding and contracting your hands with inhale and exhale, or moving them in and up and down or in and out or side to side, and experimenting with where to put your focus. Is it on the movement? Is it on the sensations of breath? Is it both? Or do you want to visualize that? So those are all breath patterns and visualizations that can be helpful. And I'll just make a brief comment about movement so other people can chime into with their wisdom and input. But typically rhythmic movements, like I mentioned, can be really regulating. So that could be swaying or rocking or even stretching. Sometimes even just wiggling fingers and toes can be helpful. Sometimes just reminding your body that it exists in some way. It could even be blinking your eyes or moving your jaw, those kinds of things. And this is slightly different than movement, but it feels connected to me, which is self-contact. There is something that can be very regulating to the nervous system about self-contact, whether it's from, say, a weighted blanket or some kind of texture of your clothing, but it can also be from placing your hands on your body in a certain kind of way. And the science behind that is that the felt sensation of something on the body helps connect to the oldest part of the brainstem, which is the part of the, like, sort of the reptilian part of our brain, the part of our brain that can drive intense activation. And you can experiment with what kinds of self-contact feels best. More tender options, like hand on heart or hand on belly or hugging yourself, or more like strong and fierce options, like having two arms on your hips or having a fist on your chest with another hand over it. So, and again, that can also be a visualization if that self-contact isn't accessible to you. So I know I kind of like took us on a little bit of a circuitous route with blending these strategies together, but if I missed anything, Kari, definitely feel free to ask or cue me.
I'd like to jump in and highlight a couple of points that you raised. And then again, I'll open it up to Karma and Brandy to offer their insights in terms of their own experience of nature connection or in facilitating programs with others. One thing you mentioned and emphasized is choice. But you know that sometimes some practices might be grounding, but for other people, it's not going to work at all. And so to always offer choice. And it's interesting because when we are training our guides to be considering accessibility, we need to offer choice. It's just essential. And I think that offering choice is also, as it turns out, trauma-informed too. It helps the nervous system, whatever your background, whatever your experiences may be. So choice, you also talked about witnessing, the power of witnessing. And we have seen this, you know, like groups of people come together and they don't want to go home, right? and they come back and they come back to the next program and the next program. There's something about having an experience, articulating that experience, sharing that experience in a group. And we also emphasize something we call contemplative communication, which is just really mindfully being present and listening non-judgmentally to what is being shared and receiving it, receiving this experience. And what we find is that by practicing this way of listening, we also get the gift of almost vicariously to some degree when people are describing the shimmering water, the release of pain in the shoulders when, you know, they immerse themselves in, you know, water or whatever it might be, right? We hear people express these vivid experiences and their physiological, you know, associated sort of components. And it's like we're there. It's like our bodies are experiencing it too. And so I think there is a power of witnessing. And then there's almost, again, this sort of vicarious sort of experience of the nature connection through other people. It really is just a remarkable thing to witness, to observe in a group. And then I guess the other thing, it comes back to choice, you know, and I know you emphasize this in your workshop and we emphasize it in our training. When we offer choice, for example, we will do, we start every program with a mindful movement, and it's often coordinating, you know, breath and eye movement, but then it can be eye movement alone, because we have people and that's the type of movement that works for them. It's accessible to them. Or then we often focus about on the face because we have people who have function in the face or the shoulders or the neck. So, or we might do the shoulders, but we offer different options and we actually encourage people with full mobility to experience other types of connecting and coordinating breath with movement. So even if people have full range of motion with their arms, for example, to experience it with just eye movement. And that takes away the hierarchy. There's no one way that's better than another way, right? In fact, it can be really helpful. It's just about bringing mindfulness to whatever it is you've chosen to do. And then always having that caveat, if anything feels uncomfortable, you take care of yourself. You make some modifications. I see that Charlotte wants to introduce a station break.
No, I was thinking the examples you were going to have people give.
Oh. Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. So at this point, I just want to open it up and pass it on to Karma and Brandy. Brandy, again, would you like to start us off and then we'll go to Karma?
Yeah. What comes to mind is just how the peer support aspect of being in this nature, you know, mindfulness program and involved in nature connection. It's been so such a nice thing to have just for me, myself, meeting all the people with eco wisdom. We all have such a shared, you know, kind of experience on our varying disabilities. And, you know, some people have really used the nature connection for all different reasons in their life right now. But when we come together in our small group meetings, especially, I really find that we all really open up. You know, Karma's been with us in our small group meetings. And we just talk so much, just like you said, about what nature has been doing for us lately and how we're utilizing it for our own health benefits and even helping others. And then, you know, the other thing that I was thinking is the Van Dusen program that we just put together. It was such a wonderful experience to hold a meditation with a group of people, have that collective experience and have those wind chimes going around the room. And I wasn't sure how everybody would, you know, accept it at first, because you're not really sure when people come to these experiences what they'll think. And I can tell they didn't want it to stop. we just kept going around and around with the wind chimes, and people had their eyes closed. And afterwards, we all just talked about how great it made us feel and how relaxed we felt. So it is, it's such a nice experience. And it's such a collective experience, and the peer support is just so important. So yeah, you have to share that.
Thank you so much, Brandy. Yeah. The peer support aspect of what EcoWisdom doing is it's novel. Like, no one else is doing nature and forest therapy guide as peer support with that kind of emphasis. So it really is a beautiful application. And Karma.
Well, I want to thank you, Brandy, for bringing that up, because it's like the magic, the gem of the whole thing. It's in action, and it's so genuine, and what an opportunity. Anyways, we're grateful for this community. I just wanted to say a little bit about, well, what you were talking about, Kari, offering choice, options. First of all, there's no judgment. We're using our contemplative communication. So we're offering maybe we could listen for a minute and see what comes by our ears and what could be triggered in our mind from that. Or we could see the sky and see how that came about in each person. But really, by doing this, I feel like we're inadvertently teaching people around us how to do contemplative listening and watching and awareness for themselves. So it's like we're helping empower people to be their own guide. And I've seen this now in action with a few people. And now I think I shared in one of our meetings, I used to go outside in the middle of the night and doing my sky watching and that. Well, I have neighbors joining me now, and they're telling stories and how that makes them feel. And it's such a beautiful thing. And this is expanding the community in ways I wasn't expecting. It wasn't a formal thing. But these practices that we learn and practice, they do emanate out like ripples on a pond. It's fabulous. Thank you.
Today we had a special opportunity to go deep into understanding the nervous system and the nurturing role of nature in bringing us into a healthier state of balance. In this EcoWisdom conversation, we also explored the factors that nature guides need to know and become familiar with as they facilitate forest bathing programs. What it can look like to become dysregulated, the kinds of mindful movement and other activities that can be woven into a program to offer care to the community, to its participants. And finally, we had something that's not touched upon in many programs, examining the needs and experiences of disabled and BIPOC participants who engage in mindful nature connection programs. So many people mention the connectedness, the community. So I hope today, as you were listening, you felt the community and you felt the desire to just within yourself see what it feels like to send love to your heart. If you can see what it feels like to look at websites like this one to know where you can find an accessible wellness program. All of this information is critically important as we move ahead to build a more just society. I want to especially thank Dr. Carrie and Dr. Melissa as EcoWisdom community and the EcoWisdom community members, Karma and Brandy. All of you are the way all of you are bringing the things that we say and wish that would occur, and we bring evidence that it is happening. So we look forward to hearing and seeing you on the next EcoWisdom Conversations. I'm Charlotte Farrell, your host, and I'm also thanking you on behalf of the Saluwa Show for letting us hear this tip of the iceberg of this mountain of information that you have that will help people. Well, I'll see some of you again next week at 10. And you know what I say when people ask what time it is. It's always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to